Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Thursday, the 17th of November. Very nice to have you with us. I just realized this is much different than usual. I have it like it's a three against one here. Right? It's like I'm on one side of the table and then the three.
Listen, right give us a nickel and it'll be okay, kid.
Well, but it's your great-looking group. That's good. I like it. This is good stuff. Joining us for our roundtable discussion this morning, let me introduce the panel. Then we'll get to the topics at hand and, of course, introduce your letters into the equation. Panel at WAMC.org.
No matter what you tell them, they're still writing roundtable.
I know. Well, you can't do that anymore. It's panel, P-A-N-E-L, panel. And then eventually it won't work.
So. Or in the French, panel.
Panel, that's right. Yeah, don't confuse them.
Yes, the significant French population of downtown Albany, yes.
WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Hi, I just want you to know that I'm going to spend a great Saturday night watching Arlo at the Guthrie Church, making a rare and unheralded appearance. He's going to be there three times to save the church this weekend. And I think it's 413-528-1950. It's either 50 or 55.
No, I don't think you can do that. You can't do that.
Try it both ways.
You can't do that.
And don't split the difference.
Because one of those is going to be really mad at you.
Yes.
Yeah, you make a very good point,
Joe. We'll find out for sure in a minute. And yeah. We'll
Sarah
give LaDuke, the number.
Sarah LaDuke.
Well, I can look it up here. But I'll just give me a second.
So, and there are just a few tickets left, so I want to make sure anybody who wants to see the great Arlo in concert in a very intimate setting.
And this is Thanksgiving week, so that's a big deal,
right? Right. I mean, that's when it all happened. That's when the great Thanksgiving massacre happened.
All right, so that will get the number for you in a second. Rosemary Armeo is here, director of the journalism program at the University at Albany. Good morning.
Good morning.
And the former executive editor of the Poughkeepsie Journal, Stushinsky, is here, and he's going to tell us what his new title is.
Well, hi.
How are you?
I'm Stu.
As opposed to Stu.
I have left the Poughkeepsie Journal. There was some economic issues, and my job was one of several eliminated. But I look back fondly, had a great time. I'm looking to the next chapter, and I guess you can call me now really good with punctuation, content strategist, digital marketer, communications expert, and usually very hungry.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's all basically
right.
Sums that's me
really
up,
great.
I guess.
You know, you mentioned punctuation, and I have to say that at age 75, I've finally really fallen in love with the semicolon. It's such a great thing, a semicolon.
It's an important relationship to maintain over the years.
You can keep going in a sentence just by putting a little semicolon.
Oh, okay. All right. I thought you were talking about, never mind.
Yeah, no, not biology.
Okay, all right. Thank you, Stu. Thank you.
Or maybe it was biology.
Rosemary has a mean look in her eye.
I do not have a mean look in my eye.
She actually just looks resigned.
I just think you all are much cheerier and happier than I am still. I'm still in the Trump slump.
Yeah.
Well, we have an audience and that depends on us to be
upbeat,
at least upbeat, right? If nothing else,
we can be truthful.
That was not in my job description.
We're actually getting hundreds of letters saying, "What should we do?" Or saying, "I listen to you every morning. It's the only news I can watch." And I have to tell you, I'm willing to bet anything that CNN's numbers have gone down by about at least a half. Because I can't tell you the number of people who say, I will not turn the television
on. Yeah,
I
can't watch it.
Can't watch it.
I can't, I mean, I'm, you know.
I read the newspapers in the morning. That's all I'm up to.
And I know this sounds self-serving, but I can listen to NPR. I can listen to the news programs in the afternoon. I can't listen to the ending, the shrieking and the yelling and the screaming on the television. I can't do that.
Well, it's sort of like halftime, because after the inauguration, it's going to rev up.
That's true. Well,
this is halftime, so the real hatred.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, we haven't seen anything yet, and I think that's Rosemary's point. We have no, the depression, we're entitled, some of us, to depression here. And I think that this country, and I know somebody who went to the shrink, and the shrink said, you must be getting an awful lot of people who are in here depressed because of the election. And basically the shrink said, you haven't seen half of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I do want to, first of all, thanks to our wonderful producer, Sarah LaDuke, who informs us that you could use 413-528-1955 or 1958 Either one will work.
But 55 is a much more
55,
relevant.
55, yes. 528-1955.
I was 14 then.
It was a very good year.
Is that before or after the chicken coop?
I read about that year.
Now Joe Donahue has went and done it.
I think we have an opening for moderator on the round table.
He is very proud of himself. I once told him in an off moment about something happened at the Bronx House Camp's chicken coop, and he just raised that issue.
What was her name?
No. It involved It involved a fence and some feed, and it was fine. It was all agricultural.
You rabble rouser, you.
I tell that story actually because I don't know why I'm even mentioning this now, but I had my press plate was NYP 1958. And a former boss at a commercial radio station looked at me and said, "Oh, I'll remember that license plate forever because that's the first year that I."
See, there you go. Okay, Joe.
Sounds like locker room talk.
Okay, Joe. We'll have a little talk after this.
I apologize.
No,
I'm sorry.
No apologies necessary.
All right, but it's not. But will you now? Not you will not forget the number 1955. Will you? 413-528-1955. Okay. We're ready to get into the topics at hand, and we go to, there's a lot to talk about, but let's talk about the idea of a smooth transition. Many of those covering it, many people involved in it, many people who are on both the Republican side, the Trump side, and the White House side are saying that it is in disarray, that the transition is in disarray. Donald Trump has tweeted, and his campaign surrogates are out in the field saying that it is smooth. It is going so smoothly, his words, so smoothly, and everything. And in fact, not only that, but he knows who the final candidates are, and only he knows.
Well, you know, Donald Trump has been known over the years, over this election period, to tell whoppers, you know, whoppers, things that aren't true. I do know that there was a story that really caught my eye, and that is that he met with the Japanese premier, and that he had had no briefing from the State Department at all. He just went in there and just talked to the guy.
When was this on? Because he's meeting with.
Yeah, it's today. Japanese. It's today, and there's been no briefing by the State Department.
Right. He wants to do it on his own. One of our favorite listeners sent me a note and saying, you know, this is, you should look at, if you have not, which I never have, The Apprentice. And I am going to spend some time in the name of research looking at The Apprentice because that is what we're watching. He's got all these people coming in. He's setting up a whole lot of drama. And in the back, he knows exactly what he's going to do, who he's going to hire and who he's going to fire. We are watching
the
government as reality show.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the issues here is that, you know, and I think it was mentioned on the show yesterday, is that it's a week after the election. This is not going to get settled in a week. There's no way it's going to get settled in a week. But I think what the difference here is okay, well, he's saying everything is smooth. But I don't remember Clinton saying everything was smooth a week after the election transition. I remember W saying everything was smooth a week after. I mean, how could it be so smooth? How could it be so smooth? I just don't see this.
Well, I think, doesn't that come from a fact that there is a somewhat established protocol of how things go in these cases? And sure, you're going to have people that turn the jobs down, and you're going to have people that say, I would rather have this for that, and you move things around. But there has been turmoil here, and because of the anti-establishment nature of the campaign and of the candidacy, you have a guy walking in who wants to do things differently. He's doing things differently, and I guess I asked this question yesterday. Is the disarray from us looking at comparing it to what normal is, and would they think it's in disarray?
Well, let's look at it this way. Hillary Clinton, apparently her transition committee, thinking that she was gonna win, had figured out who was going where in large part already. The transition team had already done that.
Well, sure.
These folks didn't think they were going to win, and they have a lot of catch-up to do. Well, and some of the people who are being considered for these high offices, I was just talking to a colleague of mine about this, people like Jeff Sessions and some of the others, are pretty scary, and they are all there in the loop because the thinking was they were loyal to Donald. And loyalty comes before competency.
When his brother-in-law and daughter are the two most encouraging candidates he's come up with, there's cause for trouble. They're scary people, as Alan put it. Jeff Sessions, who called a black prosecutor he was working with, boy, is up for attorney general. We have Nikki Haley, who's a perfectly nice governor, but completely inexperienced, no diplomacy at all. She's up for Secretary of State. John Bolton, who's a hawk, is also up for that job, or UN ambassador perhaps again. They're scary people. There does not appear to be a set way to vet and look at these people other than throwing up names and hearing the reaction back. We've got Kristen Gillibrand, who's collecting names of opposition and worry to Steve Bannon that could come up in the Senate. Whether or not it'll do any good, it's hard to say. So, there have been problems with other administrations setting up, starting not knowing they were going to win and then suddenly getting into office. But I think it's the nature of the strange man who will be picking these people. We don't know how he's going to do it. What he will value.
The whack of surrogacy, right? Alan mentioned Hillary Clinton. She had a team behind her. I mean, we saw this certainly on the campaign trail. There were candidates, but he didn't have anybody. He was a solo act. Whenever he went to any city, any town, any state, he was a solo act because nobody else wanted to be on that stage with him.
But as somebody's going to write to us right now, but she lost. And she did lose, right? And now we have this other phenomenon, right?
But I'm talking about the surrogates. I mean, she had a lot of surrogates, so he doesn't. So now he has to find those people because those people were not in line.
And the people he's finding are kind of scary. My point.
Yes, absolutely. So
he and Mike Pence ran the show, and they're running this this post-election setup of government.
So let's talk for a second about because it seems as though because we don't know a lot. It seems as though the Rudy Giuliani name has kind of gone off the radar a little bit because there was a great deal of concern. And I don't know whether that's true or not. But the other name I have not heard who was up for cabinet post that seems to be more involved in the transition but less involved as taking one of the jobs is Newt Gingrich.
He's fallen off the farm. Yeah. I haven't heard his name.
He's
fallen out of the publicity. Those are not the same thing.
No, I mean, he couldn't
be quieter because things are happening behind
well,
the scenes.
Well, he did.
He's already got his spot. Yeah, yeah. You don't know.
I mean, he did a press conference yesterday, and he was one of the people who was talking about that things were fine and it wasn't in disarray and it was going smoothly and what do you expect and
so
forth.
All the lies we always get, yeah.
Yeah. So, but my question is, initially, he was, going to walk into a spot, and I'm curious as to why that isn't the case.
It just may be sewn up and not announced. I mean, Rudy was on TV, I'm going to be Attorney General, or I'd like to be, maybe Secretary of State. And I think part of it is that there's a lot of microphones getting shoved in these people's faces, and a lot of people are answering questions, and that feeds the cloud of what's happening out there and how much of it is going to really happen in the long run. Is Rudy going to get one of these positions? I mean, so far he's up for everything except Postmaster General, from what I can tell. Maybe he is up for that.
He might be able to be okay there.
Thank you. So let's talk about Jeff Sessions. In 1981, a Justice Department prosecutor from Washington stopped by to see Jeff Sessions, the United States Attorney in Mobile, Alabama at the time. The prosecutor, Gerald Hebert, said he had heard a shocking story. A federal judge had called a prominent white lawyer a disgrace to his race for representing black clients. Well, Mr. Sessions replied, according to Mr. Hebert, maybe he is. In testimony before Congress in 1986, Mr. Hebert and others painted an unflattering portrait of Mr. Sessions, who would go on to become a senator from Alabama. And now, according to numerous sources close to President-elect Donald Trump's transition team, is a potential nominee for Attorney General or Secretary of Defense. Mr. Hebert testified that Mr. Sessions had referred to American Civil Liberties Union and the NAACP as un-American for trying to force civil rights down the throats of people.
I don't know. There must be some value to having a stalwart conservative and a conservative bent to government, but to me, I'm such a diehard liberal, it feels like we're stepping back a century.
Yeah, but this guy was loyal. You know, this guy was
one of the first
to come out for Trump and do it very, very publicly. And, you know, Trump is very big on loyalty. So I don't think this thing from 1986 is going to amount to a hill of beans. It's going to be a lot of rhetoric. And then if he wants them, he's going to get them.
And also,
that's even older than the locker talk that didn't do any good, right?
All the, after 1958.
Also, couldn't one expect that if you're going to appoint somebody and they have the inside track that they're told, you shut up.
You shut up. That's right. Yeah.
You know, you shut up. You don't say anything.
Yeah.
So that's it. So
hard
that's
for me to see Trump telling anybody to shut up.
Are you kidding?
If they want the job, they'll shut up.
Yeah. Are you kidding? Anyway, here's an interesting letter.
Yes.
Can I read it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. This is from Lisa, who was a Pocho employee, Poughkeepsie Journal. I can no longer stand the TV news. Used to watch Morning Joe devoutly, but within last month confirmed my suspicions that they were in the can for Trump. Like Prince Albert. So, I said that. So depressed and shocked, but willing to join hands with fellow Dems to fight the repugnant Republicans every day.
I think she's liberal.
There's that.
Mika? Go ahead.
Okay. Good morning, panel, says Mike. As a liberal, you can probably guess which two cable news I watched. My issue is that I feel even the liberal media gave Trump and his designates a free pass to preach hate speech and never really call them out on it. Perhaps they, cable news, were trying too hard to appear neutral. In reality, they became nothing more than another campaign commercial for hate, which has set a new dangerous precedent for elections going forward. Yes, Joe.
It just seems to me that we should be the ones calling him out on it, though. If you hear him, like, I understand the argument about the media and not calling him out on the hate, but we also have a stake in this, and we the people have the stake in calling him out on that, and we didn't.
Yes, that 40%, as I have said all along, never moved. The 40% who were polled for Trump.
I know she won the popular vote, but the people where it counted, they didn't call him out on it.
Well, let's put it this way. We all knew what he was saying because it was all reported, right? People,
yes.
They reported it, and people voted for him anyway.
I can't say anybody. I can't think of anybody who would have voted or that did vote for him that didn't know what he'd been saying. We have to take a quick break, but we'll talk about this more. We have letters and all that good stuff coming up next right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We have Alan Chartok, we have Rosemary Armeo, and we have Stu Shinsky on the panel this morning. Delight to see you all, and we have your letters as well. Alan has a whole pile in his hand.
Okay, and you write to Panel, P-A-N-E-L, right?
Panel, P-A-N-E-L.
And you don't write to, and you don't...
No, the other one.
The other one, because the other one still gets the mail. Okay, all right. Holly says, does Scott Baio get an appointment for his loyalty? How about Secretary of State? He's qualified under Trump's lack of standards, Charles in Charge. Was that a program that he was on?
Yes, he was on Charles in Charge.
Very popular show. He was a teen idol.
That was post Joni Loves Chachi.
Yeah, yes. Okay. Debbie says,
very good, Joe.
Thank you.
You may have already discussed this, but do you think there is any chance that some electorates, in other words, from the Electoral College, could be persuaded to change their vote? Thank you for helping me understand this complicated world. I've said it before. I will say it again, because this has become the new thing. You know, the new hope.
Yeah.
That ain't going to happen.
Forget it. It ain't happening.
That ain't happening.
Yeah.
Good morning.
That ship sailed.
And I could explain why again, which is these people have been appointed as electors. First of all, in many states, it is against the law for an elector to vote outside what the people who voted him
for. Yeah, I think you're right. You are right, but it's I think it's 26 states.
Yeah,
something like
26
that. And,
states.
And not only that, but these are people who gave money to the campaign who have been chosen as electors, and they're, I want to say fat cats, but that's, you can't say that anymore. So that they are you know, people of the party who have earned their spurs by giving a lot of money or being a public official or whatever.
And the guy who won via the Electoral College is never going to sign the bill eliminating the Electoral College.
That's true. Good morning, panel. My wife and I watched the first season of The Apprentice. Only the first. We were drawn to the idea of overcoming business problems and the creative solutions they implemented. It's become clear after a while that the focus of the show is much more about manufacturing strife between contestants, pitted against one another. I have what I think Rosemary is saying is a valid fear, that he's going to run the government in a similar way. Heaven help us. I have no doubt that he's going to run the way. You saw him do it the other day when he offed Chris Christie.
Chris Christie.
He said, "You're fired."
Well, the other thing, the other thing too about that show was was also very much to push the Trump brand. It was Trump water and the Trump hotels, all of the projects that were done for those contestants was to further the Trump brand.
Omarosa, she can be Secretary of State.
There you go.
She's at least not a racist. That'd be a step up in quality.
She's also one of the only contestants that endorsed him, mm-hmm. right? I mean, after,
yes.
yeah.
Okay, so Kathy writes, Trump is big on loyalty. I always thought that if you are competent and ethical, then you don't need loyalty. Well, no, somebody can have a loyal following because they're competent and ethical, don't you think?
Yeah.
It can be both. But what will win out? Do you want the yes men, or do you want the guy who will tell you what you need to know because that's what's really more important?
And if I was some of the people who are getting appointed to this cabinet, I would worry that he would do unto me what he has done unto Chris Christie, which is out of nowhere. You're fired.
We don't know that it was out of nowhere. We don't know what was going on.
No, we don't.
And I think I don't like him one single bit, but I do think that he has qualities that some people value, which is he does listen and he does make you feel important. And I can see that people feel loyal to him. His children like him.
Yeah, I wonder.
Even his ex-wives.
I wonder if the Giuliani situation will eventually turn out to be the Christie situation, where Giuliani gets marginalized at some point here. Because Giuliani and Christie are similar in their personalities. They're very forceful. They're very direct. They're very blunt. They say what's on their mind. And does Trump want that? Maybe he does.
Yeah,
maybe he wants
that
behind doors. But, you know, Giuliani's been in front of a lot of microphones in the last few weeks about Secretary of State and Attorney General, this, that, and the other thing. I just wonder how that relates. Relationship will end.
Well, I think Rosemary's right. I do. I we don't know what's behind all of this. We do know that Giuliani, all of a sudden, who is everybody was talking about being Attorney General, stands up and says, "I don't want to be Attorney General. I want to be Secretary of State." So the question is, what did Giuliani know about his appointment that was giving him pause, or what somebody was going to ask him, and what's going on here?
And why is he making it so public? If he wants the job, go to the man and say, "I'd like to go for this job." Why is he doing it in front of 100 microphones? I don't understand that.
I think it's because it's playing it out as a trial balloon, you know, that if he were up and we know he's being considered for Attorney General and he were announced as Secretary of State, there would be a huge hue and cry, not that Trump cares about that, but saying he's not qualified at all. Now the debate's already been had, and all that's left is that Trump just says, "Well, I've considered it all, and in my great wisdom as the president, I have picked him." And really, what do we have to say after that?
Lillian says, "I will be driving a Suburban full of nasty women to D.C. for the Million Woman March in January." That's January 21st, I believe.
Correct.
Is that right?
Day after
the
inauguration.
Yes.
"I'm 37, new to activism, and finally feeling my calling." I love that. "New subscriber to the Albany Times Union and researching where to put my time and money."
Yeah, I've gotten a lot of letters from that. I'm going to that march also. I have many sisters and cousins, and like the writer, we're driving down. But I'm getting notes from people saying, who's organizing, who's putting together bus rides and things like that from the Albany area. And I have to say that so far I do not know. So if something is being organized that I'm unaware of, I would love to hear about it, and I will make sure to spread it among my circles.
Well, yeah. Well, of course, you have to be careful about things like driving a van into Washington on the 21st, I think it's going to be like Woodstock. It's going to be almost impossible. So smart people like Roselle are going to Baltimore and taking the train from there.
Yeah, take the Metro. Yeah. Metro to Smithsonian stop.
Yeah.
Okay. And we heard from Lynn. They didn't think they were going to win and don't have a clue. There is too much to do besides naming top cabinet appointees. The way this works is that the person from the Trump transition team assigned to a particular department, such as State Department, is supposed to contact their counterpart at that department to start the process. No one is in any of these departments has been contacted as of now, per reporting I've seen on this. When they dumped Christie and named Pence to run the team, it took 4 days to just sign. No, they haven't. They haven't signed the paperwork. She says it took 4 days just to sign the paperwork that was necessary before Pence could officially take over. No, they haven't signed the stuff that they need to sign yet. That's been in all of the papers.
I have to empathize with the bureaucratic part of all of this. Working at a state institution, I sympathize with that.
Right.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we have many other topics to discuss. Do you have any more letters?
No. No. Chicken coops.
We'll be back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to the panel discussion this morning. It is very nice to have you with us. We have Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Stu Shinsky on the panel this morning, and we welcome your letters roundtable.
Panel
at WAMC.org. I told you from the very beginning. Five years or whatever it's been. You get used to it. Okay. It's panel at WAMC.org. Okay. So we want to move on to some other stuff and some other topics. And we'll get to some other letters in just a moment. Let's talk about Obamacare for a minute. More than 300,000 people signed up for Obamacare after Donald Trump was elected. Now, I think obviously some of this has to do with the possibility that Obamacare could be appealed, overturned, scrapped, whatever. But also, it is when the deadline, right?
It's enrollment time.
So, still a lot of people, Joe.
Yes. Signups for health insurance plans through the Affordable Care Act continued to surge this month amid anxiety about the future of the law under President-elect Donald Trump. According to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the flood of people signing up since enrollment began November 1st, surpassing 1 million on Saturday, outpacing enrollment from last year, according to new data. The signups, which accelerated after last week's election, highlight anew the high stakes in the coming battle over repealing Obamacare, which Trump and his congressional allies have pledged to do early next year.
This has got to tie into some employers raising their health insurance rates and Obamacare being maybe a cheaper option for some, because in the current climate of health insurance and costs, Obamacare may not be perfect, but it may be a heck of a lot cheaper for a lot of people.
Well, you know, I just keep thinking, I don't know how to put this, but what if you were a parent and you were thrown off Obamacare and you were one of the 20 million people who had it, and all of a sudden your kid came down with a terrible illness and you couldn't afford to pay for that person? What would you do? How angry would you be? You know, because after all, in your mind, you would see this as sort of not legal homicide, but a homicide.
I think this is going to be very interesting to watch. I think that the rates in the Obamacare programs announced just before the election were one of the three major things maybe that killed Hillary Clinton's candidacy. And so now it's a premier part of the Republican package, and they have to deliver on it now. And if we think the transition is not going smoothly, I don't think there's any plan in place to replace or repair or whatever the heck they're going to do to Obamacare. So where does that leave us? Are we back where we were in the days where you either work and got health insurance somehow through your employer or nothing? Are we back to that?
Apparently so, in terms of Rosemary, in terms of what they're saying.
And
we're going to replace it. What are we going to replace it with? Well, we're going to allow people to sell insurance across state lines.
Right.
In other words, putting more money back into the insurance companies. So, you know, that's just unbelievable.
Well, I never quite understood it, but what is it that the working class and unhappy people who didn't like the direction of the country, what direction did they want it to go in health care? What were they looking for? Do we even know that? I don't.
I don't.
No.
Well, no. To me, it is clear. It may take 4 years. It may take 10 years. But I have Medicare, and it's a wonderful thing.
Well, you may not have that for long, because that is Paul Ryan's, you know, premier cry is get rid of Medicare and put in vouchers, just put in private vouchers, which I admit I don't know how that would work either.
Well, what'll happen, of course, is I suspect is when the smoke clears, if he really gets away with that. But I think if people think that their Medicare, if the aged population in this aging population in this country think that they're going to be out of Medicare, I think that will really be one of those things that will make a huge difference to a lot of legislators. I don't think he can get away with it, and he certainly won't be able to get away with it from anybody who's on it, which is why everybody's flocking to Obamacare right now, because they figure if I'm on it, they can't take it away from me.
I don't know. It looks like the numbers are still on Obamacare, and I've argued this with you before I thought Hillary was going to lose, yeah. Alan, that the numbers are much lower on Obamacare than they thought they were. I think that the Supreme Court gutted Obamacare effectively when it said states don't have to sign on.
Sure, you're right about that, but it seems to me sooner or later this industrial democracy, or if that's what you want to call it, Republican democracy, is going to have to provide health care for people. And the best way to do it, we've all known it all along, is to extend Medicare so it's for all.
If you look at the tax program that Trump is promoting, and I've not heard him call for changes in that yet, he's going to reduce government income significantly. And so how do you pay for it? Where's the money come from?
He raised the taxes.
Raise the taxes. And when he snuck out the other day away from the press and went and had steak at the 21 Club, he walked out. This was captured by someone using their cell phone. And he walked out and he was shaking the hands of all these very rich people saying, I'm going to cut your taxes. I'm going to get them down for you. That's his plan, to cut taxes and yet and change Medicare change health care. And that, to me, does not say we're going to cover everybody and make sure you're safe.
Right. And by the way, he certainly wants to raise the allocation of the federal budget towards defense.
Yeah, I wonder if there's an insurance angle to this that is financial, which is Trump as the Republican, the big business guy, is, you know, how do the stock prices of insurance companies play into this and the financial goals of those economic needs? And, is it going to be about health or is it going to be about bucks? What's this really going to be about when this thing plays out?
He's big on those private partnerships,
That's right.
So, that may well be his plan. Yeah. Same with infrastructure.
Yeah, I think it's all financial, not about health.
Yeah. You don't repair infrastructure without money either. So if he's cutting the income coming in for everything, defense spending and infrastructure repair, what do? You cut deals with companies who are going to do it.
Yeah, some of the most active stocks since the election have been healthcare stocks.
It's been not surprising, is it?
Very interesting to watch that.
Yeah.
All right, we have letters.
Right. Did we read the Dean's letter from Mount St. Mary? I think we may have read it in here, but not read it. Okay. Great to hear Stu's voice today. Stu is a consummate newsman who learned the trade when morality and reason, in quotes, trumped profits. He recently spoke at our own roundtable discussion about media and politics at Mount St. Mary College and wowed the students as well as my colleagues. After the discussion, he was off to speak at a local event. Stu was local news and a great profession that connected the dots for so many Dutchess County citizens. It was also a great help to myself and the college in reviewing our new journalism program. Yes, he's my friend, but he's a friend to all of those in need of integrity and real concern about what's happening in the Hudson Valley. Why is your face
so? That's like a letter of recommendation.
Yeah. And we're not related. Dean, how are you? Thank you very much. We'll be in touch.
Linda says, can't we say that the separation of church and state prohibit this? Could this come before the Supreme Court? And that's about registering Muslims.
Oh. Hmm. It certainly will be challenged. But in the meantime, I'm urging that if it should come, we all need to be in line on that first day and register.
As?
My mother and I will be in line. As Muslims.
As Muslims, yeah.
Yeah, to be Muslim, all you have to do is declare allegiance to one God. So, Allah is great. Sign me up.
Good morning, says Megan. My husband travels to Japan for work several times a year. He's always treated with the utmost kindness and hospitality. He's there now, and I was on FaceTime with him this morning. He showed me a clip of news channel, and you all saw was an angry face of a screaming man. Can you guess who it was? I'm so glad we have. Oh, it gave me another perspective, and it's embarrassing and depressing that he is now the face of America. I'm glad we have you, panel. And that's from Megan.
I keep thinking of the pencil boxes, you know, in elementary school, and have all the pictures of the President of the United States. And Donald Trump's is going to be there. It's like, oh.
We also had Chester Arthur.
And, you know, Chester Arthur, actually, I said this in a speech. Yeah. He gives me hope. He was a his reputation was far worse than Trump's. He was just a hack. He was a horrible machine politician. And because of assassination, he ends up in the highest role. And he grew. It's like the Grinch. His heart swelled. And he grew into that job. So he's one beacon of hope in this, that Trump may be inspired by the magnitude of what he has
and
to do.
And looking back, Dick Nixon wasn't that bad a president. We got the environmental change and things
over
like that.
China. Some hotel issues, but...
Rochelle, with regard to a smooth transition, I think we should constantly remind ourselves that Trump is completely oblivious to what constitutes a normal functioning of the government and is simply not interested in finding out what his predecessors have done. I am sure the transition seems as smooth to him as does the functioning of any of his enterprises, so I believe that he is telling the truth when he says he believes it is a smooth transition. It's terrifying that we have an incoming leader who does not value information of any kind and instead relies on his instincts and his gut. Remember, he knows more than the generals. He said so.
Yep. You know, just to gently counter that, I don't think he's oblivious to it. I think his whole strategy is to counter the status quo.
I do, too. He's listening to a whole hell of a lot of lobbyists, too.
Which he says he's not, and he's kicking them all out.
But you can see by the people walking into and out of Trump Tower, which, by the way, even though he's kicked out the press because of cell phones, he's still being followed.
Dear Rosemary, not to be annoying, but you are you a diehard liberal or centrist? I've heard you say both about yourself. Not that I like you less either way.
I am a diehard liberal who works hard to be centrist because I think that's how you govern, an art we have forgotten over the last 8 years.
Friends, please talk about the First Amendment Defense Act that is coming our way and reignition of the always simmering culture wars. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll get back to you on that one.
Go ahead, Rosemary.
Well, take it as homework, right?
Yeah, that's
Kathleen says, Joe, I interviewed hundreds of people in Washington and Warren counties on Election Day, and many hadn't heard certain things Trump had said. I remember a veteran in particular who hadn't heard his comments about McCain. Chose Trump because he wants the military built back up. People hear what they want. That certainly is true.
You know, we keep coming back to this, that people, voters who voted for him, say they heard everything, they know all of his faults, but they voted for him anyway because of the changes he proposed. Okay, I buy that. On the other hand, you have to own it. You put in a man who is a bigot, an out-and-out open bigot and racist. And at the very least, your vote said that wasn't important to you or that you could tolerate it.
Wayne says, John Stewart commented in an interview with Charlie Rose that the Republican stonewalling of Obama, his whole presidency, created the do-nothing government that created the perfect vacuum for a candidate like Trump, and all the control is now in their favor to set the agenda unmitigated. And Rosa says, ditto, I can't watch the news. It chokes. A roundtable offers the only digestible bites of news I can take right now to the question, what can you do? Support WMC. Keep doing what you're doing. Thanks from Rosa. Thank you, Rosa. That means a great deal to us. Jason says, I say do it. The Republicans ran and won on very specific promises. They said what they had an idea in order to get enough electoral votes to win. They have the wheel. Let them repeal now the popular ACA. Let them be filmed separating families on the nightly news. Let them triple the deficit. Let them rip up free trade agreements. I say make them do it. Thanks, Jay.
Yeah, I think there's going to be an interesting point here, which will be the duration of the honeymoon. Will this be a short honeymoon? I think it's going to be a longer honeymoon, only because of the deep support he has, but there's going to be a lot of press going after issues and a lot of challenges to this. But how long will this honeymoon actually be for this guy? It's going to be interesting to watch.
I'm hearing the opposite from people about, like, why are we not looking into voter suppression and possible electoral irregularities? And it's, you're right, it's because of the honeymoon. It's like, oh, let's just, we have to accept this. But we need to be looking at that. The NSA came out yesterday and said there was definitely Russian interference with this election.
Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, doesn't that make you worried a little bit? I hope somebody's working on that.
Mary says, please stop using Donald Trump's uninformed phrase, draining the swamp, in reference to Washington, D.C. It demeans swamps, a.k.a. wetlands.
We apologize to all swamps out there.
All right. Yeah. Patricia says, Donald Trump's hate speech is one of the reasons I am having a difficult time in getting past my feelings towards my friends, family members who voted on him. We talked about
the Thanksgiving phenomena.
We talked about Uncle Harry yesterday. It's not Republican versus Democrat or an inability to listen to other views. It's the real evil this man espouses. And it's Patricia from Granville.
The New York Times had a wonderful how-to article the other day, and it was how to argue, you know. And I'm actually going to print it out, I think, for classes, because it was quite good, how to stay on point and use evidence and not get emotional. And
we're going to take a break.
Sorry.
No, that's all right. Like, you sort of, you I like your emotional when you're happy.
Yeah.
I'm seeing you smile right now. I like it. Let's take a break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We're going to get to some letters in just a moment. I just want to hit a couple topics before we do. Of course, we are still there are lines around the block still to get into the to the Smithsonian, the African American Museum that has been added to the Smithsonian Museums, and now a congressional panel is calling for a new Smithsonian Museum of Women's History, and this is a week after. A week after the highest of all glass ceilings proved indestructible, a congressional panel finds that the country needs a national museum dedicated to showcasing the contributions and experiences of women to be called the American Museum of Women's History. The institution would open in a new or existing building on or near the mall and would be operated by the Smithsonian Institution. Private donors would provide the estimated $150 million to $180 million needed for the construction or renovation.
Well, how could anybody be against it? I'm all for it. I think it's great. I think women need to have that. What do you?
Because I'm against it. How can anybody be against it? I am. Tell me why. Because, man, I'll make a deal with you.
Yeah.
You get the museum, you give us equal pay and a chance to break the glass ceiling.
What about, don't you think one leads to the other?
I'd like
to finish my sentence. I think it's terribly important that we have it, and I think one leads to the other. That's what
and
I
here's
think.
The other thing. All that money spent on health care for children, which is what women really care about. We already have a museum for women. It's in Seneca Falls. It's actually a ratty museum. It needs a lot of work. I've been there, and I'm very disappointed in it. Beef that up.
Well, I'm surprised to hear you speaking against the interests of women, Rosemary.
I'm not speaking against the interests of women. I'm speaking against the idea of a museum serves the interests of women.
Well, I'd like to weigh in. Why not? Your points are very valid, Rosemary. I fully agree, but I think this is mutually exclusive. You can have both. You really can have both, and you can have them separately too. But you know, I just wonder if this is privately funded, the construction, who's paying for it once it's open? Is this going to fall under the federal government or the donors?
Well, sure.
It's the Smithsonian.
Okay, so is that money that needs to go elsewhere? But then again, tourism is huge in Washington, and there is space down there, and they've opened several museums in the last few years.
Right.
You know, the Native American Museum, there's a Latino museum being planned.
Sure. And then there are dinosaur museums and things like that.
The natural history.
You'd rather have a museum that is dedicated to the working, important, over half the population in this country, as opposed to, a dinosaur. Please.
Yeah, the educational benefits of this
Rosemary.
And that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, in seriousness, Rosemary, if you have a
place. Oh, I'm serious.
No, I know.
I'm not putting my effort into this.
No,
fine, if you want it, but I'm bitter.
I hadn't noticed.
Stu goes, you can have either. Apparently, we can have neither.
Well, that's true.
Why are they just thinking about women now, and why can't we get into high office, so or even into the Senate and the House?
So here we have a new POTUS, a new president of the United States, who is coming in.
I'm sure he'll support this.
Oh, I don't know.
But what the question I'm asking is, if you have a place, and I understand, I certainly understand your beliefs, and I understand your position, and I'm not sure I disagree with it at all, but my question isn't it important if you have a place where there are money is being available and there's a place where scholarship and women can learn of future generations and can have that experience, is that something that is and maybe not here, maybe not in this context, but is overall necessary?
Again, I say it's redundant that it exists in the Women's Right Museum in Seneca Falls. So why do we need another whole one in Washington?
Well, there's a Holocaust Museum in Memphis, there was a Civil Rights Museum in Memphis, which Roselle and I visited, which is very different from the other and
the
better.
National Museum.
Yes, sure.
Okay, so the three men here like the idea of the one woman is skeptical.
No, I didn't.
Well, no. Your points are very valid. Your points are incredibly valid.
I don't think so.
I fully agree with your points.
I don't.
But I think you could have both. I think, is one going to cancel out the other? Or, I don't think so. But I fully agree with your points about, yes, should that money go elsewhere? But again.
Okay, it may be the timing, too, because it feels like a big old sop to me right now.
Yeah, but this was started a few years ago, this effort. This wasn't... this isn't. I mean,
talk about it a few years ago, Stu. We're talking about it today.
Well, I know because the 10 women, the 10 women on the panel were the ones that put it forward, right. What do you make of their efforts?
And Judy says, I'm sorry, Joe, but Judy says, Rosemary is right with 4 exclamation points. No museums, spend money on our kids.
Yep.
Or spend money on a tank,
sure.
Or spend money on a another space thing we don't need for billions of dollars. Come on. Kevin says, good morning, panel, a.k.a. my favorite people. I know this guy very well. I contacted Gillibrand's office to show my opposition to the position Stephen Bannon has been appointed to, but I was wondering what other actions I can take as well as to help try and get this racist out of office. And that's from Kevin.
Well, I think we're all looking for those things. I think the marches matter. My Facebook people are saying, what's the message of the march? Why do that at all? And I'm a child of the 60s, so I'm inclined to public demonstrations. I think they show that, no, Mr. President, you do not have a mandate, and we're watching what you're doing, and we will keep on watching. I think that's important, and also the sense of solidarity that you get.
Yeah.
I think you should get involved locally. I don't know. Run for Congress. Run for your school board. At least find out what your school board is doing. Give money to causes that you care about. When we can stomach the news again, watch it and read it and follow it and do something about it. We really, really have to stay alert.
And Thomas says, hi, panel. I work for a small business in New York, and Obamacare definitely helped us. Before ACA, we were facing 25% to 30% increases in premiums every year. We would get the increases down to 15% by increasing our deductibles, $6,000 per employee. That's a lot of money. And with Obamacare, our premiums are lower and our deductible is only $500 per employee. And for your information, our increase this year was only 6%, not 22%. Okay, Karen says, it seems clear to me that Trump assumes he will pay for all of his projects the way he has run his businesses. He will borrow money with no intention of repaying it. I think we'll see the deficit grow tremendously under a Trump administration, with great sorrow for the state of our country. Karen. And, hi, panel, I love you, says Nurse Carol. I have a rabid Trump fan as a good friend. She's developing a serious medical issue. She's now concerned that her insurance coverage is going to be affected, as all of this will be pre-existing condition. I bit my tongue, Carol. Well, not, you didn't bite your tongue all that much. You just said it over the radio and, I'll bet your friend heard it, Carol. So from whatever. Okay, Ken says, I was listening yesterday when Rosemary said Sanders lost because he did not play by the rules.
He lost the primaries because he did not play by the rules. That's absolutely true.
How so?
And what? Because he was saying, oh, the superdelegates are unfair. Hillary knew what the rules were, and she played it, and she won, and I supported that. So I now cannot say that the Electoral College is unfair. That was the point.
Okay. All right. Are you kidding me? He lost in part because HRC and the DNC rigged the system against him. Trump was not lying when he said that the system was rigged. She screwed him and gave us Trump. She was not the best person for the job, and her issues were in part why she lost. Her image of being crooked hurt her. She was not that likable, period, from Ken.
Okay, it's getting really old to keep arguing this. Her image of being crooked was masterfully produced by Donald Trump, who has no peers in marketing and branding. And as for the DNC rigging the system, the RNC, let's look at them. Hated Trump. They hated everything about him. They openly warred against him, and he won. The committees, the party national committees, do not have the power to stop candidates. So even if Debbie Wasserman Schultz had done the things that those emails discussed, and there's no evidence she did, there was no rigging of the system. Sanders might have won if he, for example, had made a big deal about the email, like the way Trump did. He might have won if he had figured out the system ahead of time, if he took seriously his own campaign and had fought it. And he did not. So that's it. And I'm sick of this. Bernie might have won, but there's no evidence he would have. Why would he have been any different than the 16 other Republicans and the 5 Democrats who ran against Trump? He would have run into the same rototiller of branding and assassination that Hillary did. So that's it. I'm done. I won't speak about it again. Okay? Sorry.
Catherine, I am devastated.
You're good.
Catherine, I'm devastated over the results, but after 33 years in government, I find some solace in this point. Never underestimate the power of bureaucracy to get nothing done. I am putting faith in good civil servants. You may remember that Harry Truman in Merle Miller's book, Speaking Plainly, said, we don't really know if he said all the things he said in that book, but he said, poor old Ike, he'll be sitting there in the White House like when he was a general of the army saying, do this, and nobody will do one damn thing.
I just have to add this because I don't know if we'll get to it in time, but Julie wrote and said, I'm with Rosemary on the museum so we can have an official place to view all the misogyny.
Oh, excellent. Go, Julie. You said it better than I did.
Ryan, why is there no experience required for becoming the POTUS? My point is, how can somebody be elected to POTUS when they most likely did not get hired at Walmart? How does Rosemary know that Amorosa, the former Apprentice contestant, is not a racist? That's from Steve.
She's African American.
She's African American, so I
never heard of a Jewish anti-Semite.
Yeah, this person may be claiming reverse racism.
Yes.
Reverse
racism. Yes. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. All right, George. Hayek's roundtable now the panel. No, it's still the roundtable, but you're right to the panel, don't you see?
Yes.
This is the roundtable.
It's the roundtable panel.
And I can tell you, the table isn't round either,
People have been writing in asking about, you know, why we change. There's really no...
Logistics.
The one thing we tried to do was to... roundtables where all of our mail goes for, like, the sort of the business side of, you know, booking stuff. And so we wanted to set up several separate mailboxes for... And boy, the panelists love it. Several mailboxes so that all the panelists could get all the mail. So we set up a new mailbox, and that's all there is behind it. There's no conspiracy.
No, but
it's not an election-related issue. Yeah.
But there is, of course, the question as to whether people ought to rebrand themselves, whether you're a supermarket or anybody else, because, you know, people lose, you know, faith in it.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? Okay.
It's fewer letters, people.
So George says, "Hi, X Roundtable. Now the panel stating Trump likes loyalty. We all do. However, in this case, I believe it is a wrong way street." Thank you from George. Georgia says, "Women don't need a consolation museum. We need access to reproductive health care and equal pay."
Go.
Megan says, "Hi, panel. Women's history is all of our history. Why not do a better job integrating women's historical accomplishments into regular museums? And they have diluted their recommendations, but it is privately funded. Rosemary is right that we should spend our time and money on equal pay for equal work, healthcare, protecting women's rights, and a museum, in my opinion.
I'm sensing a trend
all
here.
No, I do. I agree with that, though.
Yeah,
I think
exactly.
that they should do more in the museums that they have, the Museum of American History, the museum, all of the museums.
Yeah.
No, I agree with that.
Catherine says, so condescending. Shut up. You know, shut them up with a museum. All the men on the panel defending it. Give me a break from Catherine.
I wasn't defending
it. We're not defending it. Catherine,
you've got them on the defensive, Catherine. Good job. Yeah, they're trying to be nice. You know, men are our friends too. All of those who write to me and ask me if I'm a man hater, know only certain men.
Which one?
And not these.
Oh, not
the panel.
Not
I
me?
Like you guys.
Yeah, you like you were orange. Okay.
Our friend Barbara Smith said this is for Rosemary. Said the primary purpose of museums is educational, and they can also be highly inspirational. There are wonderful African-American museums all over the country. None of them have the scope and depth of collections of the new Smithsonian Museum in Washington. This issue could be both and instead of either or.
Well That's said, what Barbara. I said.
Well said. It's exactly where I was coming from.
Okay, so the men now feel vindicated, Barbara. Okay.
We love Barbara. She's so
but
smart.
Rosemary's points are very valid. Other points are, yes.
No, I like the idea of putting more effort and into the museums that we have.
Without a doubt, yes.
Yeah. But anyway, okay, we have...
I'm so depressed. I'm going home to eat chocolate.
Ooh, that's nice.
I'm
Save
sorry
the
we
rapper.
Depressed you. I included a story today on the Medal of Freedom, and I was wondering why I included it today. And then I realized why I included
it
today.
Because it is in politics. Jeez.
It is in politics, but...
It was refreshing.
But immediately I thought, my first thought when I read it was... I wonder who next year's Medal of Freedom recipients will be. I mean, that's exactly what I thought. So, anyway, here
no,
we
but
go.
It is. It's important. It's very, very important, and it is political because it's the allocation of scarce resources, honors to people who believe as he does.
Cultural, athletic, and philanthropic luminaries: Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Ellen DeGeneres, Tom Hanks, Bill and Melinda Gates, Robert De Niro, architect Frank Gehry, Diana Ross, Michael Jordan, Lorne Michaels, and Vin Scully, Bruce Springsteen, and Cicely Tyson.
And when they called Vin Scully to tell him, he said, I don't know why you're doing this. I'm nothing but an old
baseball guy.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
It was kind of
Vin
a sense
Scully
of humility.
So
yeah. That's why he's getting the honor.
Yeah, that's why he's so beloved.
I love this list.
Yeah.
This is it's eclectic, and their contributions are scattered across all of culture, and it isn't politics for once. It is one non-political story we've had.
The only one that surprised me on the list, and not because they're not deserving, but simply because of age, is Ellen DeGeneres, who's younger, but certainly very deserving of that award. And
do you think she'll be the last gay woman who's on the list?
Well, you have to.
No.
Okay, you're more optimistic maybe than I am.
So
on
when
that.
We have a country, there'll be more gay women.
But who chooses the president, I believe?
Well, so yes. For 4 years, you might not have it. Yeah. Although, as an election comes up and you want some votes from a community, maybe you do that.
Do you think she's the last woman? Ivanka could get it.
Well, Rosie O'Donnell won't be getting it.
Yeah, I don't think Rosie O'Donnell has a chance.
She won't be stopping by for tuna at the White House.
Wouldn't that have been great if he put her on?
Oh, that would have been great. Yeah,
I think
it wouldn't
Obama
have put her in a good
not,
position.
I bet they
no.
talked no. about. I bet they no. talked about it.
I think Obama is going to be, judging by the tone of his latest utterances, I think he's going to be conciliatory. He's not going to do anything in the last few days like pardon Hillary, which I would like, or other things that would just set off a Trump administration.
When you have these lists, you do look at them and say, really, Diana Ross hasn't been in before? Like,
yeah,
there's
true.
One of those things
that's
surprising, but I'm thrilled to see Cicely Tyson, who is still
great.
Out there, still on Broadway, still acting, and is
House
wonderful.
House of Cards. She's in House of Cards.
Absolutely.
Now, these are not the Kennedy honors, are they?
No, these are not the Kennedy Center. These are the Presidential Medal of Freedom honors, and I think they're officially given on the 22nd, and... Jordan.
Jordan is on for the first time too. Yes. I thought that was one like wow, he doesn't
and
already Lauren have
Michaels.
It.
I right after all these Saturday Night Live skits, I was like, maybe he does a lot of philanthropic work. I'm not familiar, okay. But Lauren Michaels is the one that caught my eye.
And Canadian, right?
I believe so.
Yeah. Sure, we have 30 seconds.
Just wanted you to throw this into the mix. When Ronald Reagan became president, no one went to his TV shows to view how he would lead this country. Perhaps maybe we could try to respect President-elect Trump as the 45th president, and the apprenticeship is
what
not...
What was that movie with the monkey in it?
Bedtime for Bonzo.
And everybody went to go see it. There were Ronald Reagan film festivals all over the
and
place.
And besides, he had been a governor. We looked at his record. Yeah. The only record we have for our new president is Apprentice.
All right. We are out of time. Thank you very much. Thanks to Alan and to Rosemary and to Stu.
And thank you, Joe.
Thank you. We'll be back with more after this.